This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight. From the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
So the difference here is that these antibodies were developed to protect against all three of the Ebola species, so not just one particular type of Ebola. So that's a very important difference.
That's University of Texas researcher Thomas Gisbert explaining the value in an Ebola treatment that's under development. Details coming up. Also, France, Belgium, the United States, and Britain have expressed concerns over the validity of the DRC election results. And today in Sudan, police fired on protesters marching in Khartoum and the city of Omdurman as they chanted demands for President Omar al-Bashir to resign. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, in Zimbabwe's major cities of Bulawayo and Harare today, protesters barricaded the main roads to protest a steep rise in fuel price. As calls for a nationwide strike spread, police responded to protesters with tear gas and water cannons in some areas. President Emmerson Mnangagwa on Saturday announced fuel price would rise by 150%, saying the move was needed to drive hoarders out of the market and end shortages. Reporter Ade Gondo gives us more on the issue.
Right after the fuel price increase, social media began to circulate posts urging workers to stay away from work on Monday and Tuesday. The president of Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, Peter Mtasa, is in one video. Demonstrators near the High Court in Zimbabwe's second largest city of Bulawayo sing, "We hate the things you do to police." Bulawayo commuter drivers and activists blockaded roads with stone blocks, tree branches, and burning trees. Riot police fired warning shots and tear gas in futile attempts to suppress demonstrators in suburbs around Bulawayo and the city center. While the government vows to deal with protesters who it says threaten to destabilize the country, many Zimbabweans say the decision to raise more than double fuel prices at a time of rapidly increasing inflation, chronic shortages of basic supplies and currency has pushed people to the streets. Making matters worse is the failing value of the local substitute currency, the bond note. The fuel price has been hiked from $1.34 for a liter of petrol to $3.31, with diesel surging to $3.11 per liter. Lulu Brenda Harris is a local journalist who was at the High Court when protests began.
But the people had enough reason to protest. I mean, how can the president of the country say that the official rate is 1:1? That is not fact. The bond will never equal the US dollar. And after raising the fuel high, the fuel price, obviously retailers were going to start doing the same thing. So it shows that nothing will stay stable. I think people are now waiting for the final days. I think it's now a do or die.
The member of parliament for Nkulumane from the main opposition movement for Democratic Change Alliance, Kutsatsa Pulu, was there at the demonstrations.
The people have reached a breaking point in Zimbabwe. People are very upset about the announcements now and again that their income is being eroded, fuel is going up. I observed peaceful protests, people largely staying away, until they were provoked this morning by tankers from the police who were shooting tear gas and that paper water into people's homes. And we hope that the government listens to what the people are saying.
The anger spread in townships such as Emakandeni and in Tumbane, with demonstrations turning into looting of shops and cars being burnt. Jack Sadza, an ex-soldier with ties to some of his colleagues in the security forces, says there is widespread discontent with the government.
Yeah, I think it has been a tough day today. The people have won. They actually made their voice heard. People are bitter. Things are not affordable in any way. It's unfortunate, even people in the uniforms, they can't afford the situation. Even the police, I was with a group of policemen who actually stranded. The junior soldiers are really angry. They can't afford as well. They've been told to to stay in barracks. But look here, we're saying soldiers are men as well. I mean, the salary is just as paltry as any around $300-400 for a private soldier. You can't do anything with that.
Zimbabwe is in the throes of an economic crisis which has stretched for a decade. The crash of the Zimbabwean dollar in 2008 precipitated the adoption of a multi-currency system, which has seen the notorious bond being introduced. The US dollar and rand is largely being traded on the informal market. The government has issued a statement condemning what it alleges are activities by Western governments to sponsor groups in Zimbabwe to organize the demonstrations. Observers say, however, that the ZANU-PF-led government, which came to power in last July's election, has not delivered on promises of an economic turnaround. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
Grumbling over the outcome of the DRC's presidential election is spreading, with two regional organizations adding their voices to calls for a recount of the December 30th vote. Opposition candidate Martin Fayulu has appealed the results, claiming he's been cheated of an overwhelming victory. The official count placed him second. Government officials have stood by the victory of opposition leader Felix Tshisekedi. Tshisekedi and President Joseph Kabila have denied allegations that they cut a deal that would allow Kabila to continue to play a large role in the government. France, Belgium, the United States, and Britain have expressed concerns as well over the validity of the election results. A vaccine and therapeutic drugs have kept the most recent Ebola outbreaks from spinning out of control in the DRC. Now, a new drug holds more hope for treating people affected with the deadly disease, although human trials could be 2 years away. My colleague Paula Alexander speaks with University of Texas researcher Thomas Gisbert on the advantages the treatment could offer.
This particular intervention is a treatment. So what we're trying to do is mimic a situation where what do we do if somebody already has Ebola? You know, they walk into a clinic or a hospital with full-blown Ebola. You know, they're febrile, you know, they're vomiting, you know, they have, you know, severe illness. You know, if that's the situation, what do we do? Can we save that patient?
How does this differ from the other therapeutics that are currently being used in Congo?
Very good question. So it's actually a pool of two different monoclonal antibodies that target the Ebola glycoprotein. Now, where it's a little different is there are three different species of Ebola. There's actually five different species of Ebola, but three of them cause disease, significant morbidity and mortality in sporadic outbreaks in different parts of Africa. Most of, in fact, all of the technologies currently used that you're referring to have only been developed to combat one particular type of Ebola, which we call the Zaire species. But there's two additional species of Ebola that also cause significant disease in man. So the difference here is that these antibodies were developed to protect against all three of the Ebola species, so not just one particular type of Ebola. So that's a very important difference. The other difference is that all of the previous work, if you're familiar with ZMapp and some of the other
right.
technologies, they had to be used in multiple intravenous injections that occur over a long period of time. You know, it takes hours per injection, and so a lot of times it's difficult. You know, you give somebody an injection, get them to come back and get another one. Obviously, if you can keep them in a hospital, that's great. But we're talking about third world countries here, you know, in resource poor settings. And, you know, giving that many IV injections, it's difficult, it's time consuming, obviously dangerous. So this particular therapy only requires one intravenous injection. So we've cut it, you know, from 3 to 1. One of the goals that we had when we developed this technology, and we actually have a 5-year grant from NIH, which really focused on developing, you know, post-exposure treatments and therapies against Ebola, was really targeting being able to protect not just one type of Ebola, but, you know, all the strains that could pop up, because you can't predict. I mean, there's no way to predict accurately, you know, something could pop up tomorrow and it could be one of the other strains.
Yeah, that's
one of the other things that we're really trying to focus on now too is, changing, optimizing the technology. We're using the doses like 25 milligrams per kilogram to protect the monkeys, but, you know, these are really expensive drugs to make, and can we lower the dose? You know, would this work at 5 mg/kg? And then you can extend the amount of people, the coverage, 5 times.
That was University of Texas researcher Thomas Gisbert speaking with my colleague Paul Alexander. A Kenyan court says 3 men must stand trial for their alleged role in the 2013 terrorist attack on Nairobi's Westgate Mall. The suspects are accused of aiding the Somalia-based militant group Al-Shabaab. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The suspects were in the Nairobi courtroom Monday as Chief Magistrate Francis Andayi read the ruling.
The 4 accused persons hearing are charged with a total of 12 counts, some jointly and others separately. They are jointly charged in counts 1 and 2 with commission of a terrorist act and conspiracy to commit a terrorist act respectively, contrary to the Prevention of Terrorism Act.
The suspects Liban Abdullahi, Hussein Mustafa and Ahmed Abdi are also charged with giving support to a terrorist group, aiding a terrorist group and being in the country illegally. A 4th suspect was set free. Gunmen opened fire on shoppers in the busy Westgate Mall on a Saturday in September 2013, killing at least 67 people and injuring more than 150 others. The gunmen are believed to have died when the Kenyan army retook the mall. Abdullahi, Mustafa and Abdi were arrested in the weeks following the attack. 31-year-old John Wangombe survived the attack. He welcomed the news that finally someone is going to be put on trial.
I feel good. I'm very joyful because of the way the court has ruled. We expect justice for us, for what we went through, the whole scenario. And I give thanks to the court. Sometimes they take time to check on cases, but this one was definitely a good part for me. Definitely we expect justice. The court has reformed these days, and we expect those suspects to go to jail.
Prosecutors spent more than 5 years gathering evidence against the men, in part because more than 145 witnesses offered testimony. Only 2 suspects brought before Kenyan court on terrorism-related charges have been convicted, and many Kenyans fear this case may also fall apart. But lawyer Danstan Omari says it will be difficult for the suspects to walk free.
The state has proved a watertight case. It is a story that the court is going to listen. Rarely do people who reach that stage get acquitted. Most of them, they end up being convicted.
The 3 defendants will appear in court again next week as the defense begins to present its case. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir says he will not step down, saying the government will not change because of protests. In a televised speech today in front of hundreds of cheering supporters, Bashir said the country's economic problems could not be solved by what he called vandalism. A senior program assistant with the U.S. Institute of Peace for Sudan and South Sudan program says the protests will continue as long as President Bashir refuses to step down. Mohiuddin Omar spoke with our colleague, Carol Van Dam.
This is a structural, political, and economic problem that the country is facing. So the best way for them to address this issue, I think, is for the president to step down.
Part of that problem, too, is when South Sudan broke away, and they have the oil reserves, right?
Definitely, yeah. That's one of their main sources of income, and they lost that. The government lost the opportunity to diversify its economy, and now it's too late to try to do that. And it's almost impossible to do that under the current government. So I don't think there will be tangible changes in the next few months or next year, because the same people who caused the problem are still in charge of the country. The protesters are demanding that the government completely changes its behavior and the president just goes. And I think that's the best way to address the problem.
Bashir told the crowd he will not resign, saying those seeking power need to do so through free and fair elections. What's your response to that?
Well, as if he came to power in a free and fair election, this is the guy who came to power through a military coup. He doesn't know anything about free and fair election to begin with. And secondly, I don't think people have patience to wait until free election, as he would call it, in 2020. Those problems need to be addressed right now, immediately. And can the government does that? I don't know. The government can't. I don't know if they can do that.
How are these protests different from the ones that we have seen before in their protests against Bashir's rule, which has been going on for 29 years now, including the government attacks against the people of Darfur, Blue Nile State, Nuba Mountains? We've seen these kinds of protests before in the streets of Sudan, in Khartoum, and somehow he's been able to stay in control. Why is it different now?
Oh, definitely. One thing I would point out to is that this time the protests are across Sudan. It's not just isolated one city or one town. It's across Sudan. About 2 days ago, there was a huge protest. They call it a million people participation protest in Al-Ghadarif. In that protest, millions actually people participated in that protest, according to some reports. And the next day, there was protest in Khartoum, in upper north part of the country, in the center, in Darfur, in all parts of the Sudan. We haven't seen that in Sudan for the last few years. So the difference is that the energy, the participation is day after day increasing. So that's one difference. The second is that people are able to communicate actively between participants in different states using social media platforms and other communication platforms. So we see that today happening across the country, and not only young people from universities participating, also elder people participating, young people, kids are participating in this protest.
And that's different from previous protests?
Definitely. It's different.
The thing is, it's a fact that he was indicted on war crimes and crimes against humanity years ago, and he's even traveled outside of Sudan, gone to these other countries. Nobody has arrested him. He seems to be the Teflon man. Do you think he's really going to, this is going to be his come down this time?
I definitely believe so, because the condition is just different than what we have seen in the past. Right now, what you see is that you see a greater participation in the protests, number one. And number two, the political dynamic in the region has shifted in the last few years. Also, the ability of the president to influence events in the region has completely shifted, because, as you mentioned earlier, he has lost his main source of income, which is the oil.
That's Mohideen Omar, Senior Program Assistant with the U.S. Institute of Peace on Sudan and South Sudan, speaking to VOA's Carol Van Dam. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi repeatedly has said he will not stay after his second term ends, and that he is committed to two-term limit stipulated by the Constitution of 2014. However, several movements are calling for an amendment to the constitution regarding president term limits. Recently, six Egyptian lawyers filed a lawsuit to extend the number of terms to three. If approved, the president would be able to run in the 2020 elections. Mohamed Anwar El Sadat is the president of the Development and Reform Party in Egypt. He explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El Shenawi what the campaign could mean for the future of democracy in Egypt.
Honestly, we all have been following some articles from some of those writers who are close to the president, whom they start to, you know, send messages that they recommend such kind of amendments is necessary for the president to continue what he started. We don't see any point, especially that the president himself have expressed his clear position that he have no intention to continue after his second term. So it's a bit of surprise. I don't know if the president have changed his mind or if those people are actually trying to compliment him by making such kind of campaign.
Is there any response from the president or the presidency to such campaign?
No, so far we haven't heard anything from him or from any of the official, let's say, institutions or bodies. So far, nothing, complete silence. So I think they are maybe testing to see the reaction. This is the constitution which the president have been elected and he have been sworn to respect this constitution. So I don't see how they are going to overcome, especially a very clear articles in the constitution, article 226, which is stating very clearly that no one to touch this timing or period of the president, you know. But it looks like that there is something going on. Nobody knows exactly where or who is handling this. But we are all, you know, waiting to see how they are going to promote this.
You expressed your concern that if such amendment is approved by the parliament, there would be no room for the peaceful rotation of power. How serious is such campaign to the future of democracy in Egypt?
The only positive thing we have as Egyptians gained from the revolution in 2011 was this article that we will not see a president for lifetime, that we will see a peaceful transfer of power. And this is what we all have hoped to see in Egypt as a civil, modern state. So if they will change this now, it means we are back again to not only to square one, we are back 100 years. So we in Egypt would love to see a real peaceful transformation of power based on free and fair elections. So let's wait and see what will happen, because honestly, the parliament, no one count much on the parliament because we know how the parliament is functioning.
Mr. Sadat, you pointed out in your statement to the notion of creating a transitional council to protect the state and the revolution goals after the second term of President Sisi. Who is suggesting that and why?
Actually, this is something new. It was suggested by Mr. Yasser Rizvi. He is the chairman of one of our national newspaper, Akhbar El Youm. And we know that Yasser is very close, actually, to the president and to the establishment in general. So if he is coming up with this, it looks like that they are really considering something like this to avoid amending the Article 140. So they are coming up with this kind of supreme counselor to protect the country and the revolution, something similar to what we have in Iran, you know. But again, I think they are trying to find ways, means, not to upset people inside. And also maybe there will be also some critics from outside, from the West in general. You know.
And that was Mohamed Anwar El Sadat, president of the Development and Reform Party in Egypt. He was speaking to VOA's Mohamed El Shadawi. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehius Wuhib in Washington.
This is James Butty, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. That's Daybreak Africa right here on VOA Africa.
This evening on the sunny side of